Welcome, everybody, back to the Self-Expansion Podcast. I have Alan Steinfeld here. He's the author of this book, Making Contact, which I just finished. It's an amazing book. Oh, he's got one too. Super Down to Earth. Every time I see Alan, he has this book. He's handing them out, actually. He's signing them. I actually really enjoyed the book. It's very down to earth. It doesn't require somebody to stretch their belief very much, but we'll get to that in a sec. I just want to do a little intro on Alan because I've been seeing him at conferences for basically forever, as long as I've been going to conscious conferences. I see Alan around there. He's been hosting a show called New Realities, which has reached over tens of millions of viewers, between 20 and 30 million. He also has decades of experience interviewing industry insiders of the UFO and conscious phenomenon, whistleblowers, everybody that most of us know about, Alan has interviewed. So it's a very, very amazing pleasure to be able to speak to you, Alan. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks so much for inviting me on your podcast. And, you know, the world is changing. People maybe like you have never thought about UFOs. Maybe you have, are starting to think about what's going on. And there's a lot going on. So we'll talk about it.
Yeah. And so the thing that I liked most about this, because what I know of you is that you're at these expos, you're usually the one that's rallying the superstars together in a panel, and you're facilitating the conversation. And this book reminds me of that because you take a variety of people from different spectrums. You know, there's like someone that works for the government. There's somebody that's talking about children being born into this world having superpowers. There's Bashars in there. So there's a good spectrum of voices that we hear from so that we can actually deepen our understanding of what it means, you know, what this extraterrestrial concept means. And that's for everybody to develop their own concept of. And so how do you see this opening of this book, what you brought here, how do you see this opening up awareness and understanding in people on Earth?
Well, first of all, I want to say you're right. I modeled this book after sort of the panels I've been hosting at these conferences. And I really enjoy hosting panels because it's like making soup. You get an ingredient here, you get an ingredient there, and you put it all together. And you get a variety of perspectives. And that's why I put together a book, which was a compilation of people I really respect in the field, because you know what? Nobody, and I mean nobody that I talked to, not even government officials, military pilots, people have been studying this for years, Jacques Vallée, nobody knows what's really going on. There's no who has a complete overview of the UFO phenomena. And you can ask people who've been researching this for 50 years, we do not have all the pieces of the puzzle. And I don't even know if the government does either. So in order for people or the audience or the public to understand the phenomena as we know it today, I felt it had to be from multiple perspectives. And then the reader could make up their own mind, like what sounds true, what makes sense to them, because it ranges from, you know, technology, hardware to consciousness, to how's it affecting the way we think and act and perceive reality. And so it is such a wide scope, which makes it for me the most exciting subject anyone can study at this point, because there are no answers. There's absolutely no answers. All we have are questions, and we don't even know what the right questions are. So in order to catch the public up with the phenomena, it needed to be a multifaceted perspective, in my opinion, because, yeah, I just say we are like infants looking at the world and starting to identify different segments of it, but we really don't know what reality is. I mean, or consciousness or anything. We're just now coming into the awareness, like shows like yours, awakening people to the fact there's more to us and there's more to the world around us than we've been actually brainwashed, conditioned, programmed to think about. I mean, we've been conditioned in this very narrow box of reality. And suddenly when you have an awakening, you realize, wow, how come no one told me about all this? So that's where I was coming from.
And you've had some contact yourself, right? There's a chapter in here that you wrote, and then there's 10 other chapters from
different
people. All are amazing. Mm-hmm. I have my favorites, but you guys should check it out.
I want to really know your favorites.
I really liked the one where they're talking about the kids, because it's almost like unarguable talking about it's basically stories of what children have said and how they have memories from other planets. I think I like that because my sister's son was talking about other planets when he was about 4 or 5 years old as well.
Right.
And that really resonated.
That's Mary Rodwell's chapter. Mary Rodwell, she lives in Australia, but she is one of the best researchers out there, because she seeks out these children who their parents don't understand what they're talking about, but Mary does. So Mary finds these children and says, yeah, tell me about your planet you came from. And maybe it's their imagination or whatever, but they're coming up with ideas about time and space, and you know, I mean, it's so far out that they're sort of downloading it. Yeah, right.
I mean, even if they are making it up, it's like stuff I've never even thought about. So how are they, where are they making it up from, right? It's out of this world.
So they call those children star seeds. And I'm sure you've heard that term. And I host panels with grown-up starseeds, not just kids, but they're people who have started to live that reality. A lot of them are starting to channel or bring in light language, where they talk in sort of a vibration where it's beyond words. So this is a whole cultural phenomenon. It's still subcultural. It's still like in the fringes, but as more and more people hear the stories, get used to it, talk to these children, It slowly is seeping into the mainstream about what's really going on, what's possible. So it's not the military really that's going to tell us, or the government's going to tell us what's happening. It's the children going to tell us what's happening. And that's quite an amazing twist, isn't it?
Yeah. And you left some unanswered questions about your experience with the markings on your legs.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I've actually seen that. I don't really remember, but I've seen other people talking about that as well.
Yeah, that's my story. I was traveling cross country with this girlfriend. We slept by we got off the interstate, pulled down a road. There was a sign that said, enter at your own risk. And I guess we did. No, I think it was out in western Nebraska, where there was, canal flooding in the summer, but we just were tired, and then we were just frozen or suspended animation throughout the night. And my story is not as dramatic as a lot of other people, but I can say it's like we woke up in the same position we went to bed in. Who remembered? I don't even remember how I fell asleep last night, but there was something about waking up in the morning and feeling like we hadn't moved, but yet we had, because I think we were taken out of the back of the van and examined, or whatever these beings do, and taken, well, really genetic information, leaving marks or scoop marks on people, or puncture mark. I had a puncture mark and on the back of my knee. I mean, you know, you're an athlete. Do you look at the back of your knee ever? Who looks at the back? And then I noticed my mother, actually, who I think I'm part of a family lineage. This may be too far out there for some of you listeners, but they do seem to follow people either on the mother's side, mostly probably the mother's side, because they genetically manipulate generations of ancestry. So when they come to someone like me, or maybe you, the genetics are easier to put together with their genetics to make these hybrid beings. That might be a little too much
information. Well, no, you're talking about this is what's been going on, and it could be we could be the result of that, right? Once again, nobody really knows. It's just a question. I really like that frame and that perspective, because it's just an additional perspective. And what you talked about, it might not seem like most people think of when they think of being contacted, but that's the thing. We're fed this story in Hollywood that it's going to be a ship that's physical, that breaks through our military, it comes down, it lands, and there's going to be a being that walks out, is going to greet us like we greet a stranger on the street. And that's not, that's number one, not always how it is. They've got much more capacity than that, and they're operating at levels that we don't even really comprehend or haven't been taught about, like being able to travel through time, being able to travel through dimensions. And I've got a contact story as well. I've seen orbs of light rip in through reality. It looked like the fabric of reality was ripping like a piece of paper, and these orbs about the size of a fist were flying around my wife and I and some friends. It's happened multiple times, actually, to me. It was even getting to the point where I could ask them to come, and they would show themselves. They would rip through, spin around. I don't even know if they're spinning. They would twirl around a little bit and then rip out of reality. First time I saw this, it was weird. And then you start looking and you see other people have similar experiences, just like you did.
Right. And you could photograph those orbs. I mean, they do show up on certain photographs. I mean, certain cameras. I mean, even cell phones, they show up. So usually white orbs. Sometimes you see blue orbs if you just catch it right. When I was in Egypt, I took videos of all these massive orbs that appeared around some of these ancient sites. So maybe there are other life forms. There's something there. And next time you see them, ask for a communication, ask for a message. I mean, maybe you've done that, but they are consciousnesses, I think. Yeah.
Well, I haven't asked for a communication. I've asked for them to show up when I felt that they were there around a friend who I've told them about, and I felt that they were there, and I basically just intended for them to show themselves. We were both looking out of a car window while it was driving. We were looking out of the sunroof. For some reason, it was dark. Our other friend was driving, and I just was like, "Show yourself!" And it twirled around above the car. It was moving with the car. Above us. But so those things we can just write off as like, okay, what does it mean? But it when you actually think of what the implications are of it, like on your situation, it basically, I think you were saying that you discovered, and I correct me if I'm wrong, that you discovered that there may be some technology where beings can freeze time or have some sort of...
Absolutely. This is what Bob Lazar, I didn't realize. I mean, I knew that it was like a time mold that I was in. But then I heard Bob Lazar talk about the same thing when he worked at Area 51. I mean, some people think Bob Lazar's story at working at Area 51 is doubtful, but he described what happened to me where he was taken into a room and there was some machine or something that there was a candle burning, and they froze the burn of the candle, like they isolated that object in freezing it in time. And that's when I heard that, I realized that's probably what happened to me, that we were frozen in a sort of time. It's like you have a film and stuff happens, and that stuff that happens is taken out in the film is spliced back together as if that hadn't happened. Some people experience it differently as missing time. That's one of the most famous books about the phenomena, written by Bud Hopkins, who I knew. Well, actually, after I came back from my trip cross country, I met Bud and his people. They said, yes, that's an abduction mark, which really freaked me out, because I mean, I was into science fiction and all that, but I wasn't really wanting to have that experience. But, you know, I think I did have that experience, and it just sucked me down the rabbit hole. I wanted to know everything about anything connected to the phenomena. So that's how I went to all these conferences and started to speak at them. So, that's part of the story.
That was your reason why you became obsessed with this topic.
Yes.
And so what did, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, I just wanted to know what happened to me. So, but yeah, what were we going to ask? Yeah.
So what is it like, how does it change your life? Like when you learn that, yes, it is true, there could be other entities around us. Mm-hmm. How did that change your life specifically, or did it?
Well, becoming obsessed with the subject, actually. And it changes people's lives in many different ways. It for people who are creative, it sort of modifies their creative potential. It makes it much more multifaceted. There's a story of Shaq and Jim Weiner, both artists, and when they came back, their art changed in more sophisticated ways. This guy, I think it was Jack, whose pottery got much more detailed. So there's an upgrade to consciousness, I feel, in the interactions with this phenomena. And maybe that's intentional, or maybe it just forces us to maybe subconsciously integrate a greater reality, which impacts the creative potential, because not only do we not know what's going on, but somehow they're able to get into our minds, manipulate consciousness itself. I've had dreams where somehow, and this is no one understands, how do they get into your mind to influence or be a part of your dream? I mean, that's the most bizarre part of the phenomena. How do they manipulate consciousness? And this is what people like Gary Nolan, Whitley Strieber, I mean, these are the superstars of our league here. They're talking about the manipulation of consciousness, and that's the biggest impact. So maybe everything I'm doing since that abduction has been because somehow my consciousness has been manipulated. Of course, there's free will, but you know, it's also for me the most exciting thing that's happening on the planet. So I can't think of anything else I would be in. I mean, who wants to, you know, not to offend your viewers, but who wants to watch a football game when there's this other huge event that's going on? No, but, you know, the regular, you know, entertainment's great. I still watch, you know, the Oscars and the Super Bowl and all that. But, you know, there's this thing happening.
Right.
Which is the biggest story to ever take place in human history. And it's right below the surface, unless you dig a little bit below the surface and talk to people and do your research or have a orb experience or see a phenomenon. It's like suddenly it's no longer just theory, right? You've had that experience, and it's like, it's not something you actually want to write off. It's something you want to incorporate into what is the real nature of reality, what's really going on, and how are we a part of something bigger than we've been told. Like I said, we've been dumbed down to think reality is just kind of a flat land, you know, it's just like this is all there is, but this is only the exterior. This is like the surface of an ocean. It's like if you think, oh, it's just the surface, then you never look below the surface, but there's a huge depth to the feel that this whole thing is a part of. And one more thing I want to say about consciousness, because everyone's talking about consciousness, they say this is but what is the application of consciousness is the real question of consciousness. Of course, everything is consciousness and we're all consciousness, but that's, you know, I talked to Deepak Chopra about this because I interviewed him for a lot of books he's come out with, and he says it's all consciousness. And he interviewed me about my book. And he said, isn't this all just about consciousness? And I said, well, Deepak, what's the app? Consciousness is an app. And how do you work that app? Of course, it's all consciousness. That's just the medium we swim in. But how do you apply it to things like remote viewing, like the extension of your consciousness beyond time and space, which is how these beings actually work, I feel, or telepathy, or sending thoughts to each other. Let's apply consciousness in a way that evolves us to a next level of civilization, right?
Right, yeah. And it will go to a next level of civilization.
Yes.
Because the moment we start actually being aware of everybody else as if, you know, like these beings, if they're able to come into our dreams, then a part of them is us, right? There's crossover, like just like we walk through physical space, there may be an ability to walk through time or travel through consciousnesses. We're like beaming yourself into another entity. And that seems to be what is happening in the phenomenon like channeling. Like there's some sort of connection there.
And that's so widespread now, it's become acceptable. Sorry, what were you going to say the rest of that sentence?
And like you were saying, the application of that, like what does that mean to us? Are we able to experiment within our own life and integrate these concepts, even if we can't do it in this lifetime? But what if it's still there? What if that connection is still there? Are we able to treat other people differently because maybe they are like a piece of a grander puzzle that makes us all up?
Right. I think that we're all a piece of each other, actually. People say, why aren't they landing? I mean, our consciousness is part of a collective. So if there's a war in a part of the world or someone's like homeless or something, we're feeling it. It's a collective consciousness we're all a part of. And so if you're feeling something, I'm going to feel it because there's entanglement. So we're all entangled. And this is why I think we're not getting the mass landings, because we haven't cleaned up the mess we've made on this planet, or the problems we have with each other, or the wars that are happening. Because if we're not uniformed in our way of thinking, who wants to, you know, who wants to be friends with a bunch of apes this is my favorite line from Stanton Friedman, whose favorite pastime is tribal warfare. That's what he used to say. Who wants to get connected where to us? Why are they not showing themselves? Because we're pretty violent species. If we don't like how someone looks or what they believe in or this or that, they're not even on the same, like rooting for the same baseball team. Like, you know, you go to Cincinnati, if you're not a Reds fan, you could be threatened there. You know, it's like people identify themselves and each other with their association instead of looking below the surface. And we're all, you know, guilty of that. But, you know, that's really a primitive way of seeing the disconnection between people. If we start to see, you know, our connection, this is much more in alignment with, I think, how other civilizations interact.
Exactly. Exactly. They would have to interact that way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Alan, your book is it's up to date, but it is, you know, it's not as current as what's happening right now.
Oh, right.
But what's going on right now in this field?
This is such a fast moving story. Like, every week, if you're following the UFO, and now, of course, they're calling UAPs, you know, that's unidentified aerial or anomalous phenomena. And just to clarify that, it was not just a rebranding because UFOs got associated with like weird stuff. The idea of substituting phenomena for object means like what we've been talking about. There's an interactive quality to this whole thing. So the phenomena actually is the interface between, you know, the human experience and whatever that is out there. So that's was an official kind of acknowledgement by those inside the government. Let's change the name, because these are more than objects. Like I tell people, and it's written about in the book by the chapter by Grant Cameron, if you've had an experience, you are part of the phenomena. You are not, there are no innocent bystanders. You're entwined, and more people are having that happen. So what's happening now is in July of 2023, there was a guy named David Grush. Have you heard about him?
I have not.
Oh, well, if you're up on the story, this was a bomb dropping. This was like, oh my God, this is what we've been waiting for. He was an intelligence officer for 25 years inside the Pentagon, and he started to hear stories from other people he was supervising and working with, that we've had crash retrieval of down UFOs and bodies, and this has not, it's been hidden by those deeper inside the Pentagon. So he came forward as a whistleblower and said, well, the American people are being lied to about this phenomena. And it was a huge thing. And there was a congressional hearing in July of 2023 where he said, in front of members of Congress, he says, we're not alone. We have alien bodies. We have craft. And this created quite a stir. And then the forces against that are countering that narrative, saying, no, 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 this is not true. It's all made up. So this just recently, just last week, really, there was something called the, there's something called the Anomalous All Domain Resolution Office, called ARRO, just put out their historical document saying UFOs or alien life. They just said it clearly. We have no evidence of any reverse engineering programs or any involvement with any sort of alien extraterrestrial technology or being. So they basically call the people who've come out with this liars. They're saying, no, these people have been liars, because there's really a constitutional issue going on here. Forget aliens and all that. There's forces inside the Pentagon, my opinion, that are suppressing the truth against what elected officials who have put them in place are trying to know. So there was something called the Chuck Schumer Anomalous Disclosure Amendment, where he put in writing, let's bring out in what they called eminent domain, everything anyone's having about this phenomenon, you must bring it to the government. That part of the amendment was voted out by congressional members who are, I think, are being paid off by industry insiders to keep this a very sort of segregated technology. They don't want, somehow, I mean, it gets very involved, but there's a rogue element inside the Pentagon that are making its own laws and not reporting on what they're calling black projects to the people giving them money to develop these projects, which is the elected officials, the Congress. So there's this big conflict in Congress now that's sort of on a low level burner that people are not that aware of, but some people are. There's a guy named Ted Perchette from Tennessee, Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, Kristen Gillibrand. These are Marco Rubio. This is a bipartisan effort of Republicans and Democrats to get information from the Department of Defense. So there's a strange infighting. So this report just was issued about this historical document that, no, 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 go back to work. Don't look behind the curtain. There's nothing to worry about. There are nothing here. So everything is normal. And it's an obvious ploy to distract us from the truth. And it's not working, because it actually makes people more interested. Because what about these whistleblowers that came forward? And how can you deny that their truth, sworn truth, and that means anything in front of Congress, that this is what they saw, this is what's happening. And so it's actually meant to cause confusion. Confusion is more of an impact than just out and out denial. So someone comes forward and says, this is true. Someone comes forward, this isn't true. It's like, okay, I don't know what to believe. So just forget about it, because it's too much. And the idea is we have to sort through this and see who are these people fabricating the lies, and what is the big deal? Is there really a big deal to say we're not alone in the universe? Or is there something even more suspicious or more involved than just the fact that there's aliens? Are people getting kickbacks? I mean, that's one thing, money. Or is there something even bigger that we have yet to even contemplate behind this whole thing? Maybe the ETs are totally manipulating our reality and only a few people know that. I don't know what the answer is, but I know it's big. You know, in macrobiotics, they say the bigger the front, the bigger the back. You know, the bigger the lie, the more there is to the lie. And what we're pushing for at these conferences like Contact in the Desert is to know the truth and to demand it from the government. It's like, this is a people's movement, because we might not get answers from our government, but there are some great people working in from the inside, like Lou Elizondo. Some people are suspicious of him. Christopher Mellon. These are people who know some of the truth. And so I think we're on the brink of a huge, huge shift in this year. I think we're going to have revelations that are going to shock people. That's just my feeling.
Yeah, the disclosure thing is supposed to be like a 75 or 100 year process, from what I've heard. So they are dripping out a little bit, first in movies and shows, and then eventually they let things slip out. And like you said, sometimes they let things slip out that is just to confuse people, or they implant people that are lying so that when the public finds out that they're lying, then they're like, well, maybe everybody's lying.
Exactly.
And it's just all convoluted.
Right. And I think this is on the part of the phenomena itself, because to just show up on the White House lawn, which is the cliche, is too shocking. It's too much. But so there's a slow, like they might appear to you as orbs, or somebody might see a light in the sky. So it's a really slow acclimation to like a presence that when it's finally known, or they appear maybe whenever 50, 110, everyone say, yeah, of course, we knew that all along. So it's that slow process that I think you're mentioning. So that's where we are.
What are your thoughts on there being humans throughout our, you know, beyond Earth, on Mars, on, you know, inside the moon, on asteroids? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's like two parts of that theory. Maybe were humans from the planet taken up, or are we part of a galactic race that are basically human? And if you listen to Gary Nolan, who's one of the insiders, he says that it appears that DNA is about 9 billion years old. The Earth is about 4.5 billion years old. So maybe there's something they call panspermia, where DNA was seeded throughout the local universe or everywhere as a basic format of life. And it's not, you know, it just didn't spring up automatically on Earth, but it's been seeded here. And there are human-like beings everywhere throughout the cosmos. And some people say, well, why would they look like us? But if you study biology and biological evolution, the more evolved creatures have all their senses in one place as opposed to all over. So there is a natural evolutionary explanation to the humanoid species. You know, I don't know, they may not have five fingers, and some of the beings don't have five fingers. I mean, The Moment of Contact film, did you see that? That's a film you should see by James Fox. He goes down to where they captured these ETs in Brazil, and he interviews all the witnesses. Those beings had four fingers. And there's lots of different types of beings, I'm sure. And I think there may be, some people say there's a secret space program where they've taken humans to Mars and other places. I haven't seen evidence of that. I know people talk about that. I try to be in a way conservative in my projection of what's happening. Well, if there was a secret space program, maybe we would know about it or not. But I think we're being visited for sure by beings that are not of our dimensional frequency. So they might be humanoid, but they are vibrating on a different rate of physicality. And so actually, when you come into the presence of these beings, because their frequency is different, it's very distorting to our awareness. It's like beyond our bandwidth. It's like what I say, trying to get like Wi-Fi on an AM radio. We just don't have the bandwidth, but we have the potential for the bandwidth because we're infinite beings. So when we meet these others, it's such an intensity of vibration, either we go unconscious, or we have to develop a lucid awareness, a lucidity of consciousness that brings us to an even playing field with these other beings. And I think that's the big, in a way, spiritual practice of meeting the other, is upgrading your field of consciousness and your capacity of consciousness to meet these beings on their, on where they're coming from. And that, and we do that by practicing dream awareness. How conscious can you stay in your dream states, or how deep can you go into your meditation? And when you can practice those levels of expanded awareness, you can meet these beings where they're at, because they are of, I think, a higher frequency. It's like I say, if you're talking to your dog, you're not going to bark at it. You're going to speak and meet them on the language of the more evolved frequencies, or you know, creatures or beings. So we have that potential. We just haven't activated it. That's my theory.
To me, that's the biggest the biggest shift in the game is realizing that this is all about ourselves. Yeah. Right? It's not us waiting for them to land on the White House lawn. It's us stepping up to the plate and expanding our consciousness to the realms where they operate, which is essentially in a dimension that's beyond our third dimensional space. They can come here if they wish, but if we go there, then there's more likely to have communication. And I really, the overtaking of consciousness that I hear people like Bashar talk about, that reminds me, like, my dog knows my emotional state. It's almost like our consciousness can be received by our dog. It can be received by our plants. Our plants are picking up our consciousness. People's plants start dying if they go into like a 2-month depression spell, that all their plants die as well. And this is a shift on how we view reality.
No, that's a great point. And this is what they call the ascension, moving from 3D thinking. We think 3D bodies, but to fifth dimensional consciousness, where consciousness is the medium of exchange. And yes, your dog has the capabilities of knowing how you're feeling, just like we have the capabilities of meeting those beings, but the dog doesn't have the capability to communicate, maybe telepathically. So we're learning to communicate by shifting our frequencies. And this is why the collective field is also important, because when you realize you're fifth dimension, you realize you're picking up everyone else's thoughts as well. So this is part of the human ascension, is to really be in control of your thoughts, to say, okay, I'm not going to go to a lower level. I'm not going to, you know, watch this ridiculous movie where they're blowing people up, or, you know, that there's forces here that want to keep our vibration down. Right. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to combat that up by bringing together a collective awareness, which will raise the frequency. So this is really the struggle that we're in. And, you know, the military just wants these UFOs so they can reverse engineer the weaponry. And these things are also functioning on a psychic level. So the latest from the insiders saying this is both technological and psychic. This phenomenon, this is something that Jacques Vallée, one of the longtime researchers in the field, say this phenomenon only works if you combine the technology with the psychic, or the mind stuff. And that's where you can start to explain what's really going on. But that's the next level of understanding this phenomenon. How does it interact with our psyche? And how do we start to, like you said, understand that we are these conscious beings functioning in a conscious field? And this is the next level of our evolution to realize that possibility.
But the interaction between the psyche or the consciousness and technology. So for instance, their ships not necessarily being like machines, like we think about machines that are just inanimate, dead objects. I've heard people talk about witnessing UFOs or spaceships and how there's a consciousness within the actual ship. Mm-hmm. It's intelligent, it's aware.
That's what I've heard too. And there's people who supposedly, and I don't know, I don't think I'm one of them, have been on ships and been able to, I mean, Grant Cameron wrote a book called, I think, Starship Pilots, of humans being on ships and able to fly these ships with their minds, because the ships are conscious or alive in some sense. And when you kind of move your mind into the mind of the ship, you can control it with your thoughts. I mean, there are people who can control things with their thoughts now. I mean, I saw Yuri Geller in person pick up a fork from the table and just run his finger and the fork bent, just because he sent his vibrations into it. So that's part of our evolution. There's a movie by Carolyn Corey called Superhuman, which talks about, shows people seeing through their blindfolds. But what you're talking about is merging with these craft. We can't even merge with each other, you know, so, but if once we can, because I'm sure there's people in your life and your dog, and there's conscious beings that we are merging with, that we're learning to use consciousness in these ways, you know? So that's why it's not just the atmosphere we swim in. It's something we can utilize, which is what the ETs do, or whatever those things are, to get into our dreams, to get into our minds, to implant thought, to affect our world, to create missing time, to, like, you're having a thought of wanting these things, orbs, to show up. Thoughts are things. This is what we're learning, you know? And if you're having a feeling or thought about as someone, they're having a thought or feeling about you. That's why it's good to think good thoughts about people, because if you're thinking not so good thoughts about somebody, they're thinking those thoughts about you, and it's lowering your vibration. So, you know, it's so much bigger, all of this, than we've ever been told. And we're just starting to discover. Maybe the yogis knew this all along, but it was, you know, they were meditating in caves, kept to themselves because no one really wanted to know. But now we're having this conversation, and your listeners are hearing, well, yeah, maybe my thoughts are things. Maybe if I put out a thought, someone is affecting that. And that's the beginning of the shift into this other level of reality, of meeting these beings on the playing field, which they exist all the time, because that's how they function, with the application of consciousness affecting reality and their craft and their things they want to manifest. So we're, yeah, people talk about manifestation, and that's one aspect of it. That's one little application. There's so much we can do once we know consciousness is a reality that you can use to affect the world. And everything you see around you, Ra, is a reflection of your consciousness. Everything in your house there is something you manifested in some reality. And so when we realize that, then we can realize, well, maybe we can affect it this way, or not affect each other, but come together with each other in even a greater forum. Because when two or more are gathered in that, that actually not just doubles the effect, but it creates much more power. So that's what they're waiting for. Okay, let's clear up the wars and the toxicity and the way we treat each other and come together. And then maybe we can have a sort of open contact where we go as a collective civilization, not in singularity, but in the sense that we're all together, to next level of what we're capable of. And maybe free energy is possible. Maybe there's abundance for everyone. Maybe the real a currency of exchange is creativity. This is what my theory is. And when we're all have enough food, I mean, it's kind of idealistic, but when we all have enough food and we're all living in the homes we want, then the real purpose of incarnation, I think, is to be creative, to create more of reality, create more abundance, more joy, more possibilities, just by whatever you're doing. Maybe it's being an athlete, or maybe it's singing or writing music, but that's my overall thing. What I call the flowering of humanity is to activate the creative potential inside each human. And that's why we've come here.
I'm with you on that. And that right. It really is, it brings up the notion that reality may not be as we were taught. It may not be so stationary, and it may be more fluid and responsive to our conscious awareness. And things like war is almost like what we're choosing to be. It's the story that we're telling ourselves of.
Right,
of,
because we've been programmed and dumbed down. And sorry, I mean to cut you off, but I just
go for it.
Yeah, no, we've been. I think we've been purposely. Not, I'm not like a huge conspiracy person, but we've been purposely kept at this vibration because there are people and maybe beings benefiting from our very closed-mindedness. I mean, the people who benefit from war are definitely not the civilians involved. It's the people manufacturing the weapons. And, you know, every 30 years, there's a war in this country, and there's always a war. And who's benefit? I mean, why are people making, I mean, it's ridiculous, or even war with each other. But, you know, there's money involved. And we don't have free energy because the fossil fuel company, if it isn't even fossil fuel, is making billions. And if there was free energy, that's a great upset to the 1% in charge of reality. So
I really also like that what you said about manifestation being just the beginning, because yeah. I get a lot of hits and I have to play to the algorithm on my social media content, but a lot of people are interested in manifesting and essentially manipulating reality. And I like teaching that as a stage, but eventually you get to the point where there is no, like, if we realize reality is fluid, then we first, our human mind is like, okay, what can I grab? What can I create right. for me? But that's like the kindergarten phase
right.
of that power. Right. You eventually are, there's more to it.
Well, there's so much more, and this is something Joe Dispenza talks about. I'm sure you know him. He says, there's one level, manifesting what you want. That's great, but we are in this co-creation. We are in this, like, field that's not static. It's ongoing. It's flowing through our consciousness all the time. It's a stream of consciousness, which is a term William James created. The stream of consciousness. And this is what the Aborigines showed me. I studied with the Aborigines, and they are, their dream time is when you step out of your own world and you hook into the Tao, the flow, the they don't call it the Tao, but this dream time is when your thoughts start to dissolve and you're getting this constant movement of the dream inside your own field of awareness, and this flow of consciousness, or this flow of the Tao, the reality, is feeding us new novelty, is what the word Terence McKenna used. It's feeding us constantly new things. So the real gift of manifestation is what my teacher, and it was Joe Dispenza's teacher as well, Rampha, said, is to make known the unknown. So yes, we can manifest the known. I want this, I want that. but how do you bring into the reality of the world something that's never existed before? Yeah, you want this car because you know it exists. But what do you, and this is where creativity comes in. The act of creativity is making known the unknown, which is the most exciting thing, is when you interact with the Tao of creation or dream time to bring into manifest reality something that's never existed, like a song or a dance or this or some new art form or a painting or a even a photograph or a thought or words or speech. This is like the excitement of incarnation, is making known the unknown, which gives more possibilities to all of us to play in this bigger field. And that's an ongoing gift of reality that we've been sort of shut off from, because we just want to manifest this, this, and this. But the real task of manifestation is to bring in new realities. That's why I call my show New Realities, because that's the real gift or yeah, excitement. Isn't that?
Yeah, thank you so much for wrapping that concept in that way. And I've also heard people talk about, and I'm also on the same spectrum of how I view things, that making known the unknown is actually easier. Isn't really the term that best describe it, but I'll use it now. It's actually easier than manifesting something that already is, because it's already been manifested. You're trying to manipulate physical reality when there's the origin of it all is in this non-physical space, and bringing that into fruit so that you can hold it, you can bear it.
Right.
Is like, that's what we're meant to do. That's more natural than trying to manipulate somebody else's manifestation.
Right. Thank you for saying that. No, that's such a good, I'm really glad you got that piece. And you know what? We're always being fed the unknown. If we just stop, you know, the monkey mind, the thoughts, and just trap into the dream time, the unknown is moving through us moment by moment. So you're right. It's actually easier, because this is what we're made of when we get out of the manufactured ideas that we've been force-fed to perpetuate reality in the old way. So yes, exactly.
Speaking of your show, New Realities, if there's somebody who's newer into this, which I don't think anybody's like that new if they've listened this far into the show, but I guess what I'm asking is, what do you think is one of the more profound interviews you've done on your show, just so we could send some people there after they're done watching us here?
Well, I feel like I've been sort of a talent scout, like who is at the cutting edge of possibility. So when I heard about Bruce Lipton, where he talked about epigenetics, the fact that you don't need to pass down the same genes, but genes are actually malleable, that you can influence through a Jean-Baptiste Lamarck theory of evolution, you can influence your genetic offspring by intention. Then I went to see him and he said, yes, we are the masters of our genes. We're not the victims of our genes. And that's been a whole thing he's developed. But he used this whole creative idea to talk about biology, you know, and he says, and I write about him in the last chapter in my book, where it's the epilogue, where he sums up the idea that we are not humans until we create humanity, which is where we all realize we're all like part of the same big super being called humanity. And when we come to realize we're part of humanity, we speak as a oneness to speak to other ones. It's sort of what I've been saying. So that was one really exciting discovery, because I met Bruce long before he was like, so now you can't even get an interview with him until like 2 years, you know. I mean, he'll talk to me because I know him, but if you want to reach Bruce Lipton, he's like impossible, because his theories became so understandable and important and influential that everybody said, yeah, of course, he's speaking truth. So he was great. When I met Nassim Harmin, where he talked about nested black holes, I'm sure you know him, that was another like revolution of the nature of reality. Or even the artist Alex Gray. I'm sure you know Alex Gray, right? Or some of you.
The other two. Is Alex Gray, I don't know names very good, but go ahead and explain what he does.
He's a visionary artist who, like, when I saw his work, and he did stuff for the band Tool, and, you know, he shows you the insides of reality, how one reality is kind of moving into the next reality. It's like, oh, I want to know this person. I want to understand his art. And so he was a big influence. Lynn McTaggart's an incredible woman who understood like the bond effect of group consciousness. And she wrote a book called The Field. So these are some of the people that I've been really excited about meeting, interviewing, bringing them to the public. Who else? Anita Marjani. I just saw her last week. She had the most lucid near-death experience I've ever heard was she went to the other side. She saw this incredible landscape and came back. She wrote a book called Dying to Be Me, which she had said she had to die in order to be herself. But her teachings are so deep, profound, and compassionate and so human. And yet she was also aware that there was these other entities on these other side, on the other side, that were not so human too. So, I mean, so I know. So the new realities is realizing that there's so much more is possible for us. It's about each of us. It's not about what these people say, but how do we apply the multidimensional awareness of who we are and the realities that we can perceive to each one of us. I mean, each of us, and I teach classes in remote viewing, and there's one coming up in July with LightNet that shows you we can perceive beyond time and space. We can actually project our consciousness into the future. This is another application of consciousness. And people, psychics, do it all the time. They're not always right, because the ones that aren't right, there might be, not be a future that's laid out, but the ones that get a sense of the future get out of the way. Like, we can do this once you get your personal agenda out of the way. This is what I say in my class. You have to disconnect from the personality app in order to engage this other application of consciousness that removes the personal agendas from this ability to see beyond time and space. That's the exciting part, because we're not our personality. We're not our history. We're not, you know, what happened to you yesterday. We're this, William Blake called it the imagination. Neville Goddard, who I've been listening to a lot on Brian Scott's show. Love him. It's great. Yeah, right.
Brian Scott's awesome too.
Yeah, Brian Scott and Neville Goddard saying, no, the imagination is the God. I mean, this is what I'm saying, this dream time flow of the Tao through our consciousness, this stream of consciousness is who we are, because we're not our past and we're not our future. We're the movement of time, space through consciousness. And if we can start to identify with that, as opposed to like, oh, this is my political party, this is my baseball team, this is my favorite, this is my wife, this
my
is
job.
I mean, all my job, my children, all that's real and that's great to have, though, but you're not that. Those are just aspects of the self and of the extension of self. But who you are is the now being in the flow of time, space, eternity. Time is the flow of eternity through consciousness, basically. So we are the eternity of being in this form right now. So, yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about your remote viewing class. Like, how do people sign up for that?
Oh,
what are they doing
great.
During? How long is it?
It's a 6-week class. I'm just looking for my flyer. It's a 6-week class. And sorry. Okay. It's a 6-week class online. And if you go to, right now it's called the starseedacademy.org, and it starts in July. And, we learn the basics of remote viewing as it was taught by, you okay there?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you could either go to lightnet.org or the starseedacademy.org. And
there we go.
So we learned the basics of, and as it was taught to me by the Stanford Research Institute, when the CIA wanted to develop a psychic spying program, they heard the Russians had a psychic spying program. Then the CIA said, we can't let the Russians do anything we can't do. So they went to Stanford Research Institute. They went to Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ, who were at Stanford, formed this organization at Stanford. They got this psychic Ingo Swann, and he started to lay out the foundations of how to attune your mind to someplace beyond time and space. And the amazing thing is, when people do the class, I'm shocked that everyone can do this. Everyone can do this if they get their personality out of the way and start to extend consciousness with intent. You just put the intent out there and say, okay, you can't win the lottery from this, because it's not about that. I mean, maybe some people do, but it's about feeling the the essence of intent wherever you put your consciousness. So you can send your consciousness anywhere through intent. You know, if you had a picture, if I held up something and you didn't know what was on the back of this, you have to get out of the way enough to let the image be received by the right brain. That's really how I teach it. So in a sense, you can't teach it, but you can learn it. You can learn how to do this through intent, through making yourself available to this flow of what I call the signal. Well, other people call it that, the signal versus the noise. The noise is the stuff the personality is always thinking about. The signal is coming from the object or the target. They call it target. And we do target practice when we're remote viewing. Someone has like a folder that has a picture inside, or I say, okay, this person is at some location. Can you tune into this? Or I'm showing a picture of an event that happened in the past, and people get the targets. And when they really get the targets, I call that a bullseye. Like, you know, I had this picture of the arch over the Mississippi in St. Louis, and someone in the class said, well, I'm seeing an arch. And then someone says, well, I'm seeing this river. And I'm saying, okay, let's put this all together. And this is how they would remote you in teams for the CIA. Mm-hmm. So they put, I got this piece, you got this piece. And then someone said, oh, maybe it's the arch in St. Louis. And it's like bullseye, you know, that's the target. So, you know, I use the analogy, if we all saw a movie, the same movie, and I said, well, what's the movie about? We'd sort of get some pieces of the movie, or you might say, well, the scenery was great or the acting is great. So we all get aspects of everything. So in the remote viewing classes, when we're all trained to start to tap into this flow of consciousness and everyone gets aspects of the target, the fun is to put it all, because you don't want to name the target. You want to really be right brain as to receive the signal. And then once all the information is there, this is how I do it, there's infinite ways of doing this, then you put the information together, which is maybe what the CIA would do, and say, okay, what's the target that the Russia, where are they developing this nuclear weapon, or whatever they would use their psychic spying for. But now it's being used in so many applications, mm-hmm. this remote. And like I keep saying, we can all do this. We are naturally gifted to do this. And the Stanford Research Institute proved this, they would get the secretary in the office to say, okay, can you remote view? And they would. So it's like, it's just an application of consciousness we have yet to discover. So.
Yeah, CIA's Project Stargate is, mm-hmm. You know, our military industrial complex is using mm-hmm. this. I know somebody that did remote viewing for a country in Europe. And I also, somebody showed up my house last year. And she said that she uses remote viewing to help find missing children. Like that's what her essential, that's like what her job is she remote views to help people find missing children.
Yeah.
This is a real thing going on.
Yes. No, that is a major application. No, that is so important. You're right. That's probably one of the most important way. And I'm sure she's doing it because she's been successful in doing it. So yeah, that's great. Thank you for saying that, because these are practical applications of consciousness that we can do when you get to be, you know, proficient, because, you know, everyone can do it. Like everyone can play the piano, but you know, it takes practice.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll get that link from you. I'll put it in the show notes so people can get over to you in July.
Yes. Great. I'd love for, it's going to be a great class, because I'm always shocked though, when people get like even Hal Puthoff, who started the program, say, every time someone would get the target, because he's a scientist, he said he had no idea how that happened. And actually, no one really knows how. I have my own ideas about the physiology of how remote viewing works, but there's no doubt that it works. I mean, it absolutely works. How it works, what the mechanism of it working, when we discover that, we're going to discover really what consciousness is as something we exist in beyond time and space. So it's really exciting, this stuff.
Well, I hope everybody checks you out, especially, you know, the things that we've talked about today, like the book, Making Contact, New Realities on YouTube, this course that you're talking about. Is there anything coming down the pipeline that you'd like to share that you have going on?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to be speaking at Contact in the Desert. I'm going to be hosting probably a remote viewing panel there. What else am I doing? I'm doing a couple of book talks, maybe in the New York area. Oh, I'm doing the New Living Expo in Marin County and April 19th to the 21st. I'm doing, if you go to my website, newrealities.com, you can see the latest of upcoming schedules. And, you know, I'm doing interviews. As when I find someone new who has like new insights, I want to meet them. That's why I call myself a talent scout for consciousness. Like who's coming up with the latest? Like, you know, I'm sure you know Joe Dispenza, right?
Yeah,
because
of course.
He's like, he's become hugely popular and he's a great guy, but I knew him before, you know, he was speaking to like 30 people. And because I recognize, wow, this guy is onto something. Or like, I think artists or new innovative artists are something I'm also really excited about, because it's the same thing. It's or a different aspect of the same thing. It's that flow of the unmanifested into manifested form, and new inventions and new possibilities and new ideas. And, you know, I like, I've never met him, but I like what Charles Eisenstein says. Have you interviewed Charles Eisenstein?
I have not.
He's a creative guy. What Terrence McKenna used to talk about, or, you know, there's been some, or Marshall McLuhan. These are great geniuses whose unique perspective sort of molded the future of culture, or even Linda Moulton Howe, as far as a UFO researcher,
right.
She's one of my favorites, or what's coming out of Bashar's mouth or Daryl's mouth. And, you know, there are great thinkers appearing at this time. I mean, even what some people are saying about AI, or the, you know, Riz, the guy who talked about the simulation technology. Yeah, Riz is a great guy. And so this is a renaissance I think we're in, and the UFO phenomenon is adding to the excitement of what's new. It you know, the renaissance in Europe, from a very Eurocentric point of view, was spurred because they discovered a whole new continent that they never knew about. They created movable type, you know, the printing press. They used the telescope. They discovered this old Greek knowledge that very much influenced the people at the time. Well, these Greek philosophers were genius. So it added to this renaissance of thinking, of creativity, really, is what I'm trying to say, like Shakespeare and, you know, Leonardo da Vinci, and these real geniuses came out because they were stimulated by this new knowledge that they were able to then take and expand upon and create the arts that activated their genius. So I think we're coming into the renaissance, a new renaissance, when these new activations of thought stimulate new neural nets of awareness to ignite new creative potentials within the human being. So that's what I'm looking forward to, all this new possibilities, you know, the podcast revolution, like anyone can have a pod, which is great because everyone has a voice to say something new, creative, possible, and then to have this incredible community of interchange to start to move these ideas around in people's minds that are always looking for new information, and then stimulate new thought in other people, that just kind of snowballs into a new society.
That was beautifully put. My favorite part is when you were talking about how the external adventuring is impacting our inner soul exploration.
Right.
And that's what's happening right now as we're looking outside of this earth, or and even this dimension.
Right. And creating new neurological connections, which create new thought and new possibilities, which lead to new inventions and discoveries and ideas about who we are and what human potential really is. So this is I think the ET, UFO, whatever that is spurring on, I think, the creative possibilities if for us humans. It's a human experience.
Yeah, well, I can't express how amazing this has been, because just here talking has opened up new pathways of thought and exploration to myself and I'm sure that everybody listening. And so, well, Alan, it's been...
Thank you. That's exciting for me to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked up to you for a really long time, and so it's been an honor to be able to speak with you. And hopefully we can connect and do this soon again.
Anytime, Ra. I really love what you're doing. You're a really great guy. You're gentle and compassionate and sensitive. You know, I think you've developed a sensitivity that people might not even be aware of. We're just looking at the old part of you as a performance, whatever you're doing. That, and now you're developing another part of yourself that, you know, is skilled in that way, and you're bringing an awareness of that sensitivity to the people that listen to your show. So thank you. It's been fun for me, and I've been
honored. I received that reflection very much. Thank you so much. All right, okay. Everybody, check out Alan. Take care.